You're watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. And of course, we are talking this evening about a possible extension of the MCO. We're also talking about the possible extension of the pain and suffering that many Malaysians are going through right now because of the ability or inability for them to earn. In our earlier conversation with a few economists as well as a few research houses on the show, we were talking about why there is an important need and an urgent need to keep Malaysians, both individual Malaysians as well as businesses, to be or to remain competitive and to remain efficient in terms of earning from the market. And because of this, we have been brought to our attention a joint statement that was given by both Iman Research as well as the Research for Social Advancement, or REFSA, where both of them, in a joint statement, argued that a robust COVID-19 exit strategy should enable Malaysians to make a living safely. And part of the conversation that will take place between two of them, that will take place between these kind of research houses, is on whether or not it is even possible for the government to issue some sort of a statement or guideline to help guide Malaysians and businesses to be enabled to enable us to earn safely during this MCO, even if it is extended. So I have the pleasure to invite the author of such a statement, Badrul Hisham Ismail of Iman Research. Badrul, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. Let's go behind the notion of why both Iman Research and REFSA decided to issue a joint statement on this issue.
Well, the reason comes from our, thoughts and our thinking that we cannot be in this cycle of MCO forever. We've already been in it for more than a year, and there needs to be something else other than keeping people in their homes under lockdown to deal with this crisis.
The statement says that the government needs to reset its pandemic management approach. What would be some of the ideas that goes behind this call by both Iman and Ressa?
Well, one of the things that we know after more than a year dealing with this crisis is that this crisis is beyond just a health crisis. It is also an economic crisis. It is a social crisis. And in Malaysia particularly, it's also a political crisis, which means the political planning strategy and the political will to deal with this crisis is very important as well, which is why you cannot just only look at from the health perspective or even the health system, the healthcare system perspective. We need to look at other things that are highly affected by this crisis and how to deal with those other things while at the same time making sure that we are safe, we are not being infected with the virus and all that.
Earlier this week, I had a conversation with Prof. Jeffrey Williams of MUST. He was making a very interesting conversation or argument where the decoupling of the health crisis must take place with the economic crisis. He says that the government's twin approach of solving both the health crisis as well as the economic crisis collectively and simultaneously is no longer tenable. What do you think of this idea of decoupling the way we manage our economy with the way we manage our health crisis right now?
My opinion is not that we should decouple it. My opinion is that at the moment, we are not even addressing the economy issue. We are only addressing the healthcare issue. And the lockdown was designed from last year to make sure that our healthcare system are able to deal with new infection, with high number of cases. And it hasn't changed. And after a year, we are still dealing with that thing. And we are not even looking at any economic planning. We are not even looking at how to make people able to earn livelihood. And that's just one aspect of it. I mean, we haven't even talked about the social aspect and other things as well.
Yeah, but the government has dished out billions of ringgit in various forms and manner, including Pemerkasa Plus, Penjana, and so on. Don't you feel that this is part of them addressing the economic issues of the country?
If they say that's what they're doing, probably it's an attempt, but it very far from reaching its objective, because the reality on the ground is whatever aid that they are giving are not enough for people to be able to continue to have food on the table on a daily basis. We're talking about people who have families, who sole breadwinners, who need to feed, their children and their spouses. 500 one-off payment or 1,000 plus one-off payment are not going to be able to be sufficient.
There is a strong case by a lot of institutions within KL and also around the country including that of IDEAS and many others, SME Association, they say that the need for the government to allow for businesses to resume operations is critical. And in the press statement that both Iman and Refsa published yesterday, you argue that the impact of the lockdown is rather uneven, that it adversely affects non-essential sectors. So I'm trying to marry these two arguments here. Do you feel that not only do we have to think about how the government must resume the economy of Malaysia, it also has to give a lot of priority and a lot of thinking towards the non-essential sectors, the way you guys have highlighted in your joint press statement?
Well, basically, the effect of the lockdown, as we all know, is that people are unable to make a living. And one of the things that a lot of other countries, and you know, to a certain extent, our government is also doing, is to give financial aid, sort of, you know, complement, you know, the loss of income. But clearly, that's not enough. And after months and more than a year of this thing, you cannot rely on that. And we admit that the government has spent some sort of you know, amount of finances to give out these aids, but allowing people to continue to make a living is a more efficient way and smart way, so that not to burden the government, at the same time have people the room to, you know, give people the room to make a living. And we, after a year of this and, you know, learning from other experts from all over the world, we know that there are certain things that we can do to allow people to be outside to make a living. Our knowledge of the virus from last year when we started the lockdown was very minimal, but now we know a lot more of how the virus, you know, gets spread and how it affects other people, and we know how to mitigate those issues. So using those knowledge and creating SOPs or procedures that would, you know, be more specific in dealing with those knowledge that we already have, we can, you know, easily allow people to continue to work, which is going to take the burden off the financial and economic crisis.
When we talk about allowing people to remain productive in the economy, we are also talking about reducing the need for people to be on financial assistance. So it's a twin approach to solving this economic crisis, because if you earn, not only are you providing yourself sustenance, you are also reducing the burden that the country has to deal with when it comes to providing you with financial assistance. So it seems that it makes a lot of sense to allow people to resume back their economic activities. However, this has to be balanced with the rising cases or the cases not or unable to be reduced up until today. In fact, there is even cause for suspicions, largely because of the positivity rate remains stubbornly high at above 7 or 8%. So how do we balance the need for us to allow for people to earn while at the same time ensuring public safety is being upheld?
Well, the first thing we can do is to ensure that all businesses and all employers are creating a safe space and safe environment for their employees to come to work. And this can be done through a number of ways. The government can incentivize businesses to put in place mechanisms that is more than just checking in and checking your temperature. But also, as one of the findings of the virus that we know that it's airborne, we can, you know, make sure that we install technologies to make sure that the airflow is good, that it, you know, disinfect the air and disinfect all the other parts of the office as well. We can put social distance or physical distancing measurement in the office, you know, putting space between each co-workers. And there are a lot of other creative ways that doesn't really require new technology or new funding to do this. Like, for example, rotation system. Instead of having everybody come to work at the same time, you have less people at the office at the same time, creating a different shifts and different working hours. Probably one team go to work 1 week, the next team go to work the other week. This has been done in a lot of corporations and businesses since last year. this can easily be promoted for all businesses, and with, I mean, depending on their capacity, of course. And at the same time, which have, for some reason not have many people have been touched on, is, you know, the idea of limiting people to move within a specific time frame would only increase crowd and increase high traffic. So instead of having, I know we don't have curfews, but it seems that, you know, businesses have very limited hours to operate, but it will create crowds. So instead of doing that, we should just spread. Businesses can work, you know, with less crowd, with less capacity, but in longer hours, instead of specifically from 7 to 8 or 9 to 6, for example. They can work in different shifts, they can work in different hours, and public transportation would also benefit from it. We wouldn't have everybody going to work and coming back from work at the same time. Again, avoiding crowds, avoiding high traffic, which is one of the main reasons of the high infections.
Badrul, you said in your statement a rather strongly framed passage. It's stated here that rather than a one-size-fits-all arbitrary metric of workplace capacities, SOPs should be science-based and dynamic, updated regularly with inputs from industry players and also data from the field. So inadvertently, you're saying that the SOPs that we have right now aren't science-based, is not getting input from industry players, and may not be using the data from the field. Where do you guys stand on this position? Is this really how you guys feel about the situation right now?
Well, at the moment, there hasn't been enough transparency on the data for us to be, you know, confident that the data is sourced by all the stakeholders, are getting inputs from everyone who's involved, from whatever capacity, either they are just small businesses or just regular citizens or big corporations. So we don't know enough the mechanism of the government in, you know, producing these SOPs. So that's one thing. And experiences talking to colleagues, talking to other people who own their businesses, other, you know, labor workers and all that, it seems that their voices are not being heard. Their concerns are not being heard. Again, you know, giving the perception that whatever procedure that is being developed now are not taking into consideration all aspects of the society where everybody would have their own different issues that need to deal with. A fitness boutique gym, for example, would have a different issue than a regular office. So they need a different kind of SOPs. Some associations and some industries are sort of proactive in engaging with their corresponding ministry to suggest SOPs, to pressure them to give suggestion on how they can operate within the, you know, limitations that we have. But not everybody are that empowered, and not all businesses are part of any association. Some businesses don't even know what ministry they are fall under, which is one of the main problems when they announce that businesses can apply to open under each ministry. But, you know, not everybody has this kind of understanding what business that they, what ministry that they fall under. A bookstore, for example, what ministry do they fall under? Education, small trade. So we don't know. So there's a lot of, you know, information that we need to get from them, and there's not a lot of there's a lot of conversation that needs to happen and collaboration between the government and the people and the industry.
Okay, we'll go for a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Badrul Hisham Ismail, the Director of Programs at Iman Research. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me Badrul Hisham of Iman Research, who's talking about the ability for the nation to continue to make a living in a safe environment with or without the MCO. This statement was issued jointly by both Iman Research as well as REFSA. Badrul, the moral of the story at the end of the day must always be on how we get out of this. Could you describe to us what you think the long-term economic impacts would be when it comes to a prolonged MCO with no, I guess, strategic exit strategy when it comes to us making a living?
Well, the reality on the ground is that all we need to do is just go out and look around our neighborhood. We see more closed shops. We see more businesses folded. And we are not talking about the effect of three weeks of full MCO lockdown. We're talking about more than a year already of lockdown and possibility of being longer in the lockdown. So not only are we talking about businesses that are not going to be able to operate at this time, but we're talking about businesses that are not going to be able to operate at all. They have no capacity to bounce back even if the MCO is lifted tomorrow, for example, because we're talking about more than a year of effect already. So unfortunately, I don't really see any good story coming out of this, but it doesn't mean that we should continue being under it. Just because we are already in a problem doesn't mean that we need to be in it. The longer we are in it, the longer the recovery will take. The government come up with a 4-phase of recovery plan that ends by end of this year. I don't think that allude to the reality that we are dealing with. The recovery will take years. What we are being presented is a lockdown exit strategy. It's not a COVID-19 crisis exit recovery. It's two totally different things.
Yeah. So how do you think Iman Research would approach the story of COVID-19 pandemic recovery? What would an exit strategy for that look like?
Well, we have to look at as many ways as we can do as possible, not only looking at putting everything in one basket. Because right now, the strategy, it seems that making sure that we have herd immunity, that we get everybody vaccinated, 80% of population vaccinated, and then everything will be okay. That is not going to be the case. Even countries that already have high population of people vaccinated, they are still dealing with issues of new variants that might be more deadlier than the previous ones. So we have to think about living with COVID for a longer period of time. So that's one, admitting that reality. Second, allowing life to continue, knowing that this is going to be with us. Basically meaning that, repeating what I've been saying earlier, allowing people to make a livelihood, allowing social life to resume, allowing political life to resume, with the understanding that there will be some limitations that we need to deal with. We need to look at this from a spectrum, not from a specific issue, dealing with one issue and then dealing with the next. No, we have to deal with everything at the same time and understanding what are the extremes that we should not go into, how far of the healthcare capacity that we should not exceed, and how far of the economic capacity that we should not exceed. And we need to sort of always operate within these boundaries, meaning for as of now, allowing people to go to work while putting those new SOPs, a more detailed and more robust SOPs in place to make sure that it's not going to result in an exponential increase of infection. And that's just one aspect of looking at it.
That's it. Final word, Badrul, before we end this show, what would be some of your ideas when it comes to urging the government to hear the pleas of both Malaysians as well as businesses on making a living safely again?
Well, unfortunately, I think as a citizen, we need to be more proactive in demanding what we are due and pushing for the government to take measures that would benefit everyone, because we cannot entirely rely on them to come up with everything as we have done for the past year. But we need to be more proactive in making sure that they are listening to us, that they are taking our views into consideration. And it will be a constant pressure that we need to put. So we need more organizing among ourselves. We need more to create pressure groups. For example, I was just talking to one of the representatives from the Fitness Industry Association last week. And she was, sharing her experience last year of, consistently engaging with the ministry to propose themselves proposing the SOP, making sure that the ministry understand that they are able to, follow these SOPs, and it's a constant thing. You deal with one ministry, you've been pushed to another ministry, then you have to deal with them again. It's difficult. It takes time. It takes energy. But unfortunately, there's one thing that we have to do. And that is what democracy is, basically. It's us taking part and being active in the society, making sure that everybody is taken care of.
Thank you very much. That was Badrul Hisham Ismail, Director of Programs at Iman Research. Iman Research is a Malaysian think tank which works on protective security and community service. While the joint statement was also issued by REFSA, or the Research for Social Advancement, they are a not-for-profit think tank that promotes social advancement in Malaysia. If you've missed any part of this interview, just head on to astroawani.com, look for Notepad over there. You can also look for Iman Research or REFSA. Till then, thanks very much for watching. Catch you in the next one.